Pen and paper. Pen or pencil and paper. Groups of three. Raise your hand. That's fine. Raise your hand if you don't have a group yet. I need a group. I need a group. Here's two over here. Lisa, we just figured it out. Welcome back. We've talked a lot today, so it's time for you guys to do some more talking. Pedagogically speaking. So to continue from the parami to presence to role, now I'd like to do some reflection with you on the difference between helping and serving. Or you could just say service is a word that gets used a lot in ministry circles, in the vocation of chaplaincy. The tricky part about caring for other people, as we keep talking about, is it intersects with who we are. You know, like my own history, strengths and shortcomings, my experiences, what I don't know that I don't know. So I have you in groups because I want you to do some thinking on your own, and we're going to come back and hear from each other. Yeah. Because you have been, now it's been September to October, October to November, November to December. What? You've been in this training. You're almost halfway there. So you've each been in your own way swimming in information, in field trips, in engaging with one another, in coming to class, listening, reading, writing. So, in my mind, it's about the time when a little bit of the pink cloud honeymoon of the training beginning begins to change course a little bit into what am I really going to pay attention to? What's really happening for me? Yeah. So I'm going to read you something and then ask you to talk about it with your group and ask yourselves the questions and write down, what does this have to do with me and my path of service or spiritual care? Okay? So this is going to include some disclosure to others. The others I'm going to ask to listen and see if you can understand where the person's coming from. So here's one quote. This is, I'm stirring the pot and you're going to talk. I'm going to ask you to bring back to the group something that you think is really important for us all to keep in mind going forward. Okay? So you can put at the top of your paper, for our entire community, our group recommends the following in light of where we're at this time. You get the idea, right? Listen, share, discuss, and recommend. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. Who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. As we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. I'll read that last part again. As we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So start with your group. What words stood out for you? What images came up for you in listening? What has touched you? Then you can go from there. This is from Marian Williamson. Our greatest fear is not that we are inadequate, but that we are powerful beyond measure. I'll read the whole thing again. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. As we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. And before we hear from each of your groups, let's do a little another connecting exercise and also do a little movement. I'd like us to... Can you take that so we don't need microphones for this? In silence. This is going to be the top of the circle. From this is like 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 12, picture circle. The person here at 12 o'clock has the darkest eyes. We're going to arrange ourselves in silence so that the person here has the lightest eyes. So we're going to go around and we're going to look at each other and position ourselves accordingly. Does that make sense? So if you think you have the darkest eyes, stand here, and then somebody else will come up and you can decide. Okay? Do it now. It's fun. Are we a tie? I'm going to stand here and see. You're light. You're on this end.
I'll stay close to you.
Yeah, let's stay here. Your own eyes. Take your own eyes. There's a Zen text about cooking that people love, and there's a lot about just practice in it. And there's one line that talks about caring for the particular food as if it's your own eyes. What is that?
Tenzokyo.
But what's the... is there a particular food that you hold as if it's your own eyes? Or just the food in general?
What is he talking about?
Tomatoes or potatoes?
He's talking about handle each ingredient as if it were you're holding Buddha's eyes. Which I thought was kind of creepy. Anyway. But I got the message. Carefully.
So let's hear from the group that was in that corner. What a little bit? What arose as a theme in your conversation, or one thing you might invoke into our circle for all of us as we go forward?
Okay.
We're not going to argue the point, whatever you make. Okay, we're going to.
Oh, okay. I don't think it's very controversial.
Okay.
And at least not a serious point. For our entire community, our group recommends sitting with our own suffering and purifying oneself so that we can help others with radiant openness.
Wow. That sounds great. Will you put that in the Slack to the group?
Sure.
We'll do that with each of them because we might forget them and that would be terrible. Would you say it again?
For our entire community, our group recommends sitting with our own suffering and purifying oneself so we can help each other with radiant openness.
Thank you.
Ours feels kind of like a cop-out now, but for the entire community, our group decided to recommend leading with Don't Know Mind.
Say it again.
For the entire community, our group decided to recommend leading with Don't Know Mind.
Leading?
Leading.
With Don't Know Mind. And how is that a cop-out?
I don't know. I don't. My mind doesn't know.
We'll just consider that mind chatter, and it's not a cop out. Thank you. Would you put that on the Slack for us? Thank you.
Okay. Our group came up with getting out of our own way, and maybe practicing some anatta or not self, so that way our beautiful qualities can arise, and we can trust the wisdom in our body, in our intuition.
Get out of your own way. Would you say it again?
Practice getting out of our own way by practicing not self, so we can trust our own bodies and our own intuition.
Thank you. Would you put that in the chat, in the Slack for us?
I also already put the quote in Slack for everyone.
The one that I read?
Yeah, the one you read.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ours was exactly the Don't Know Mind one. So that's so fascinating that we came up with the exact same thing. We didn't just talk about, you know, soccer and then steal it from you. Don't Know Mind is a portal. Don't Know Mind is a portal. Thank you for reminding me. Can you elaborate, because it was your image?
I don't know that
there's a portal to
the other person.
It's a portal to connection. And there was a second part, which was awakenment is not on the spectrum of shrinking and fabulous.
Awakening is beyond the spectrum of shrinking and fabulous?
Yeah, it's not on the spectrum, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it on a different spectrum, or is it spectrum-free?
Now we're into Shariputra and Avalokiteshvara. So,
what is it about Don't Know Mind that is so compelling? What is the liberation of Don't Know Mind?
Well, on a higher plane, I related to that. I'm not sure if it's a Zen story or some kind of Buddhist story about the teacup and the teacher's pouring the tea in the cup and keeps pouring it. And I don't know. I'm getting it all wrong. Then it says something like, you know, I can't teach you. I can't put more tea in because your cup is already full. So I relate it to that, like having an emptiness, an empty mind without expectations when you're with people. And I related to Lisa and I this morning. We're talking about, you know, it's very helpful to know something about the people that you're working with when you go in. And then on the other hand, there's something about not knowing anything about them. And just, you know, I'm not saying one or the other is better, but there's something about this sort of blank slate and not knowing who they are and then just being open to mm-hmm. whoever they are. Something like that.
So So I have a thought in response to what I heard from you. And maybe Gil and Paul do also, or not. I didn't hear anything from you about making sure something happens. And I think this is, it takes some practice to really integrate that chaplains don't make something happen. That's not the job. The world around us has conditioned us into performance, product, operationalizing, you know. So it's going to take some practice to really integrate this. But I think in entering the discernment, the what's here, where am I drawn, and that kind of listening and meeting, but kind of at this juncture to really think about and watch the allure of fixing and helping, and to consider the effort it takes, the energy, the focus to not fall in to that. Or when you fall in, put on the brakes and think for a moment. Now, if I want to tell them something, am I telling them something because I'm uncomfortable or it'd be useful to them? And we're going to move into the winter to talk about assessment. Chaplains do kind of assess what's happening and think about what would be useful and then do that, you know, after being really present and doing the kind of connecting we did today. So I invite you in the next weeks to read again, think about that, what is service, what is helping, what is fixing. Because your answers, what you said for the group, seem to be in the spirit of companioning, meeting, healing, and not helping and fixing and controlling. Yeah. It takes, I think, a lot of faith. And if you think there isn't faith in the Dharma, then there's some talks that you could listen to from Gil. He's got a few. I don't know if you do, but I just know Gil's because they're all on the audio Dharma. You put in faith in Gil and all these things come up. Well, thank you all.
I just have to confess is that because I've done all that, I try to control, I try to fix, I try to repair over and over, and it never worked.
I know. Thank you for the testimony. It's unsustainable for the provider, let alone does it work. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, I know. And you know, Picasso, the painter who blew open the world of modern art, was classically trained to paint a still life just like he saw it. So we do need to have fundamental abilities to be present, to listen, to protect, to engage, to establish a kind of rapport. And then we can riff into not knowing and companioning and discerning about what's a useful intervention or not. So I think even the Bhagavad Gita begins with somebody quitting and seeing that his efforts are fruitless. Is it Arjuna, right? Doesn't it start with he's like, all the things I've ever done to get ready, and all my arrows are not working. And he breaks down like Arjuna. That's a pretty impressive comparison, huh? I don't know where I had that one stored, but it came out. Impressed myself. Okay, so thank you all for a little reflection and teaching one another. And now I'm going to lob things over to Gil for our monthly closing ritual.
So to have faith in a process that comes out of not knowing, faith in a process is not just our efforts and we do it and fix it and make it all work. To trust that there's more here, and for Buddhists, it's often we call it the Dharma. And to take refuge or to be oriented around the Dharma, to be protected by the Dharma, to be devoted in some heartfelt way by the Dharma is part of what we do in Buddhism. And so if you find yourself to be a chaplain for Buddhists, one of the things you can do is to help them go for refuge. And it's very meaningful for many Buddhists to chant the refuges. Some people will chant them in Pali, some people will chant them in other languages. And the kind of default, in a sense, is the Pali version. It can be done in English. They have a beautiful version they do at Zen Center. And so to have that under your belt, your ability to do that, but then to, in addition to that, to, it's like a little ritual and a little something, you know, it's the power of association. If people that we're working with ritually in chaplaincy, if there's an object which is associated with people's idea of refuge or the Dharma or what Dharma means for them, then if they see that, they feel it, they remember that object, it inspires them, it feeds them, it kind of like wakens that part of them. And so we have something in Buddhism called, sometimes it's called refuge cords. Sometimes it's called blessing cords. Sometimes it's called protection cords. There's a different names for it. And that are, you can, and it's kind of a useful thing for a chaplain, if you think you're going to run into Buddhists, to have in your little toolkit. You know, it doesn't take much space to have a few red cords. Usually they're red. And symbolically, they are supposed to be meant to be a thread from the Buddha's robe. So it connects you back to the Buddha, because he's supposed to have a kind of a reddish color robe. So it's supposed to connect us back to that long lineage, a thread of people that goes back, and all the kind of community, the sangha of people who've been involved ever since. And so it's a... One of the simple rituals of Buddhism is the protection cord, refuge ritual. And some Buddhists don't know about it, but that's okay. You can introduce it to them. And there's different ways of doing it. One way is you give them the cord, and they tie little knots on it, maybe one for each refuge, a fourth one maybe for their intention. If they have particular challenges that they want, or things they want to evoke, like, you know, I've heard this parami of strength, of effort is a really important one for me, but I need help to remember. Well, let's make a knot for that in the refuge cord. So you have, and the usual ways to, nowadays is to put it on the wrist. Some people put it around their neck. So I've seen people put it around their ankle. But what's nice about the wrist is you end up kind of touching it and feeling it, maybe feeling the knot. And then it's power of association, remembering, oh yeah, the parami, oh yeah. And so it's a way of kind of bringing the what you have faith in, what you trust in, what you're working with, close in, so it's more part of your life. And for people who are in times of crisis, it's a good thing to have with them. It's good to be grounded and remember. So chaplains can offer that to people. So we'll do a little one here, just a little sample. And you might think about how you might incorporate this and make this into your own way of doing with someone if the circumstances are right. So these kinds of things can be done casually, and I could just fling the cords to you and kind of look at my watch and, well, you know, let's get on with this. And that will have a certain, you know, effect. Or we can do it with respect and care, as if we're really kind of connecting to the Dharma or our care, our reverence for the Dharma. So there's a little bit of what I call theater involved in this. But I don't say that to diminish what we're doing. I have a lot of reverence and care for this kind of intentional doing something with, in a way that evokes or touches into something and expresses something that actors might do on stage, but we don't often associate it with us. You know, but that's in the form of art. That's an artwork that people are doing. So as art, as embodiment of something, that I think is, then we're conveying something more fully and has more meaning. So for that purpose, I'll put on this. This is also considered to be a Buddhist robe that we have here at IRC. It's an abbreviated version of it. And the way it, the colors of it are that the Buddhist ministers at IMC are lay people. They're not monastic. And the white is the color of lay people in Southeast Asia. The white devotees, the Buddhists will wear white clothes. But the outer rim is the Buddha's robe color, the monastics of the Buddha. So it's being connected to that lineage as well. So I put this on, and then I'll come here, and I have, the Buddha has been caretaking these refuge cords here for a while now, so it's already become kind of special that it's associated with the Buddha. So I bow, and I gently receive from this gift from the Buddha of his robes, threads, and then You can hold it together like this. And we'll do the chant, the refuge in Pali. If you don't know it, it's fine because you get full credit for humming along. And so first we do the homage, and then we'll do the Pali. We'll just do it one time through. But after each line, homage to the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, we'll do a knot for each refuge. And as you do the knot, just reflect on what your connection is to Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. What meaning, what value? Is there some way it touches your heart, these three things? And then once we make the knot, we'll put it back, three knots, we'll put it back on, then we'll finish the refuge for the second time, for a third time. And then you'll turn to someone next to you and help tie it on the wrist if you'd like. So just join me for this part. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. So turn to someone next to you and let them take theirs and tie it around their wrist or their neck or whatever they'd like. And so we'll see over these next days, today, tomorrow, next week, how this string works for you. Does it protect you? Maybe it reminds you of being impeccably ethical in a way that you would not have been otherwise, and you're protected by that. Maybe it reminds you about some of the values that you live by, and maybe you'll be a little bit more kinder to someone because, oh, you look at your clock and your watch and, kindness, that's what you associate with, or compassion. Or maybe you think of it as a blessing cord and you say, wow, I was just blessed by the whole chaplaincy team here. All of us together kind of combined here and you feel, well, you know, maybe I'm not such a bad person after all. So who knows what will happen here with this, that now that you have this wonderful string around your wrist. May it support you in caring for the world. So thank you for today. Thank you very, very much. I'm very grateful that you're interested in this and participating so well and for what you are moving into. And may this string also serve as an encouragement to keep your inspiration alive, and that you're actually continuing in this kind of form of chaplaincy training. You're continuing a momentum that of care and compassion and practice and freedom that was begun 2,500 years ago by the Buddha. And then this long lineage of people that long before us have brought it to us, and we're now in this training in a small way, continuing that momentum and continuing the momentum into the future. May the compassionate care for the world continue for a long time. Thank you.